So if we could bring Jim Hamill over and let him share his screen. Give him a moment.
Yeah, I don't see him yet.
Well, we can see Jim's barn, apparently. But...
yes. That's the Nebraska backdrop.
Here we go. Tim, Mitch, can you see and hear me?
Yes, we can see and hear you.
Okay, great.
So we're going to turn it over to Jim now. And just for the newer trustees, Artisan has been in our lineup for quite some time now. They are global growth equity manager. So they do have the ability to deploy across the United States, Europe, Latin America, Asia, wherever they're seeing outsized growth opportunities. I think we've always had really good enlightened conversations with Jim and his team about, you know, where the upsides and where the potential downsides are. I know a year ago, Jim was kind of echoing some of our concerns that the path forward looked difficult and uncertain. And I think this would be a great opportunity for him to share kind of what's going on with the portfolio and positioning and that sort of thing moving forward here. But Jim, I'll turn it over to you.
All right. Thanks, Tim. And thanks to the board. Tim, do you want any comments on team philosophy process, or you want to go right to performance and positioning and outlook?
I think we've got some newer trustees, so maybe just a quick moment on philosophy. And so it's kind of the groundwork for what you're doing, and then we can keep the focus on performance and positioning in this market environment. Unless, Chair Gordon, unless you want anything else on that.
No, I think that's perfect.
Great.
Great. I'm going to assume you all have this slide deck in front of you. So rather than trying to pull it up, I may just reference certain slides, and I'm going to keep that introductory really short. So if you have our slide deck, it would be slide 8 on our deck, which is our team. I'll just spend 30 seconds there. As Tim said, we've had a relationship, I believe, for almost a decade now with Contra Costa County. And it's obviously been a great relationship. We've been doing what we've been doing for 25, 26 years. So I've seen a number of economic environments. And I did listen to the last 10 or 15 minutes of Tim and Mitch's presentation. So I'll agree with about 95% of it. This is a precarious economic backdrop that we're going through. With respect to the team, again, we have been around a long time. The leadership, we've worked together for almost 20 years. Can't overstate the importance of having a team that's been together that long and has a diversity of backgrounds. With respect to philosophy and process, as you probably know, we're global equity managers. We absolutely have a growth tilt to us. From an overarching philosophical view, I've felt this way for 25 years, and I feel just as strongly today, and that is, as long only equity fully invested managers in stocks, we have limits to how we can allocate capital. But what I know for sure is follow the profits, follow the free cash flow. You'll be very well served by following the cash. So high quality is incredibly important. Be broadly diversified, meaning across sectors and across geographies. And we've willfully chosen to be global equity managers. We're fundamental bottom-up investors. So we're stock pickers. That's where the vast majority of the alpha has come from over time. So I listened with great interest to Tim and Mitch's commentary on the macro. So I will tell you, I'm not going to offer any opinions on much of that, because that's not where I spend my time. But I do largely agree with what they were saying. And then lastly, from a fundamental standpoint, allocating capital across equities is one of the unique characteristics of our team, meaning conviction weight, concentrate your portfolio into a fairly small list of businesses that have the characteristics that you really appreciate, particularly in different economic backdrops. And that's very, very important today. Just a couple more comments on process, and I'll reference slide 10. which is on security selection. You know, what is it that we do from a security selection standpoint? Really high quality businesses that have what we call franchise characteristics. We're looking for businesses that have a very specific thesis, very specific catalyst. Know why you own every single business in your portfolio. Do not just accumulate good businesses. Know why you own that good business. And then lastly, understand valuations. Understand what a reasonable or an attractive valuation looks like and what that band of reasonableness is. Because as we all know, the stock market has a certain level of volatility. So a single point estimate is never the right answer. There's a range of reasonableness given the economic backdrop, and we pay particular attention to that. My last comment on the process is the capital allocation. And, you know, it's really a business work process around how you stage capital in your portfolio. I come from a farming background, so I grew up on a farm. So I characterize it as our garden crop and harvest process. So don't let that confuse you. It's nothing more than how do you stage the capital through time, meaning you need to have the seeds. You need to have a garden of these really interesting, well-positioned businesses where they're early on in a new trend, catalyst, thesis that tend to be the riskiest businesses in the portfolio because you certainly can be wrong. But they're the businesses where you really build your conviction such that at the point in time when your thesis, your catalyst does begin to play out, you can put a lot of capital to work with high conviction. And that's what we call our crop positions in our portfolio. It's the top 20 positions in the portfolio. It's always 60% or more of the capital. Today, it's closer to 68% of the capital. So those are the 20 stocks that create the alpha. That's what matters in any point in time. They're the lowest risk businesses in the portfolio because whatever the thesis was that we had developed, it's evolving in a very favorable fashion. And then lastly, the harvest of the portfolio where we begin to trim or outright sell businesses in the portfolio due to either valuation or a maturing or a deterioration of the fundamentals. So that's, in a nutshell, that's what we do. We are active equity, long-only global managers. And when I say active, I say that very purposely because I think it's very, very difficult in the equity market to create value for yourself and clients if you're not active. And that includes knowing when to buy and knowing when to sell, or at least modify the portfolio when you have those extremes in valuation to add value over time. That's philosophy and process. I'll pause there for anyone that wants more explanation.
Sounds like a Kenny Rogers investment philosophy, right? No one to hold them, no one to fold them.
Yeah. At least be more right more often than you're wrong, knowing you will be wrong from time to time. Yeah. I'll touch upon performance, and I'm only going to reference one slide here, and that's slide 33. I think you need to put performance for us in the context of the backdrop of the last 3 years and in the backdrop of some of the macroeconomic factors that you all were talking about over the previous 15 to 30 minutes. 2019, 2020, 2021 were some tremendous years in the equity market. They were amplified in an environment of ultra low interest rates. And certainly for us, we took full advantage of that, you know, up 36% in 2019, up 41% in 2020, up 14% in 2021. So the starting point, and I know I had talked to Tim and Mitch about this a number of quarters ago, the starting point back in November, December of 2021 was not all that constructive for us, given the fact that not only had the equity market broadly participated, but growth tilted managers, ourself included, versus value, there was the widest spread that I've seen in 25 years. meaning growth was at a very, very measurable premium. So we certainly took numerous measures to try to mitigate the valuation risk in the portfolio, including trimming many of our more richly valued growth stocks globally. Now, keep in mind, we're long only fully invested managers, so there's limits to what we can do, but tilting the portfolio away from that. And throughout the course of 2021, accumulating more what I'll call growth cyclicals, businesses that were taking advantage of a broader global economic acceleration. So financials, industrial tech, consumer discretionary is some of the things that we had been doing in 2021 to try to mitigate the downside. I will say, given the fact that interest rates turned so quickly between November, December of last year and really June, I could have anticipated our underperformance relative to a broad index, but the rapidity at which rates went from almost zero to 4% is clearly had an impact on the relative performance of the portfolio versus a broad index. But what I will say, and this is unusual for us, is back in June, we did see really what I'll say a normalization of that valuation spread. And we did something we don't typically do, and that's, you know, have a webcast with all of our clients that would listen to us and say the multiple compression as a result of rapidly rising interest rates and its impact on longer duration assets, that multiple compression has now normalized. I still believe that today. So you're in an environment in June and again today where it's gonna come down to not so much relative valuation, it's gonna be, can your business grow? Can you generate cash? Can you do that without accessing the capital market, which we all know the cost of capital is higher now, and do that in a way with an expectation of an interest rate that's closer to 450? And I heard some of your comments on the macro. I would kind of disabuse yourself of trying to call whether or not we're going to have a recession or not. Just assume we are. I think the odds are higher than 50%. We're probably already in it. And if we're not, we're really close. But the market is a discounting mechanism. So our rate's going to stabilize at 4.25, 4.5. That would be my best guess. But again, I'm not a macro person. And if that's the case, what you're going to want from here is businesses that can actually grow top line, more importantly, free cash flow, without being negatively impacted by rising rates, meaning you better be in a great financial leverage position and not being reliant upon or being forced to pay higher interest rates, because the valuations aren't going to be the primary issue. It's going to be, can you grow? Because I really think it's going to get challenging from here for the average company to grow and expand their margins. And a lot of that's because I happen to believe a lot of what Tim and Mitch had to say about the economic backdrop. So our experience is that when growth becomes much more difficult to come by, and we're beginning to see that now, but I think it's going to last a year or more. If you have the ability to grow, you're going to be well served as long as valuations aren't out of whack relative to history. In January, I wouldn't have been able to say that. Today, I would say we're a lot closer. If I'm wrong in that statement, it's going to be from an issue that I think you all appear to be debating. And that's, has inflation plateaued, or are we so far behind that rates actually have to go, and when I say rates, it's the expectations of rates, does it actually have to go a lot higher to tame inflation? And in that case, it's going to be really difficult for a longer duration asset to outperform. But that's my backdrop. If you look again, I'll close my comments on performance by putting this in perspective. Huge run up for 2 or 3 years, low interest rates, that changed in a hurry, rates are going higher. Going back 6-9 months ago, the valuation spreads for growth over value were too high. That's now collapsed. That's not the issue any longer. We were out earning, when I say we, it's just the equity markets had out earned for about 3 to 5 years. After this meaningful drawdown in performance, we're down year to date 32%. We still, over the last 3 years, have compounded money at 11% for you all and the rest of our clients. The long-term equity returns are what, 8%-ish? So I think it's going to be a little more difficult to earn outsized returns in the equity market in the next couple of years because of the economic backdrop. But I do think if you're going to have if you're going to have the ability to do it, you better be in businesses that can do it for you because they can grow and they can generate a lot of cash and shorten that duration. That's my comments on performance. With respect to positioning, from here, because I gave you some commentary on what we had done back in late 2021. From here, given where valuations are, given what we're seeing in the global market in sector by sector activity, I'd be really concerned about investing in cyclicals. Now, all businesses have some cyclicality to them for sure. When I make that comment, I specifically reference businesses that are dependent upon positive economic activity to drive their underlying cash flows. I would be very concerned about that right now. So credit sensitive financials, industrials, cyclicals, I would be concerned about some consumer discretionary, particularly at the lower income demographic that requires, again, accelerate economic activity. I'd be worried about that. And we've tamped down to the majority of our positioning in those areas. There's some exceptions, but for the most part, that's a smaller part of the portfolio in a meaningful way. I've made some statements about growth. I would definitely focus on businesses that have rock solid balance sheets, have the ability to expand pricing to cover inflation, and aren't relying upon the capital markets for growth. So from here, I really like healthcare, growth-oriented healthcare, and growth tech. When I say growth tech, it's because valuations have come down a lot, and they are one of the single most important drivers of productivity and efficiency and cost reduction for many enterprises. And there's still an enormous amount of technology yet to be deployed that can help accelerate that. So businesses that we would have been trimming on valuation back in November, December, January of a year ago are businesses that are actually we think much more favorably of today and are actually reaccumulating them down at these levels. Healthcare, and I'll specifically say growth healthcare, still is interesting. Valuations are fine, but they are, for the most part, their growth is independent of economic activity. And there's certainly a lot of great, a pipeline of productivity and new products in biotech. Not to say that we invest a lot in biotech, but what I'm really interested in here is biotechnology, processing, manufacturing, and the components that go into bringing those drugs to market. The other interesting area from a growth standpoint, although you have to be a little bit cautious about valuation, is alternative energy. And I imagine we could talk about that for hours. But with the increase in fossil fuel, and it's amplified in Europe tenfold from what we're seeing here in the US. But with a levelized cost of energy so much higher, it makes alternative energy that much more compelling. So The problem with it is it's not as cheap as what it was, but the secular trend, and with the Inflation Reduction Act, which really should have been renamed the Climate Change Act, there are so many subsidies built into that for CapEx to be deployed against a grid, a hardening of a grid, electrification, EVs, solar, wind. So while the valuations are the upper end of what I'm comfortable with, there's no doubt that those businesses' top lines are going to accelerate over the next 3 to 5 years. So those are the things that we're looking at in a very positive construct. But I will admit, I am a bit nervous still, as I sense some of you are from the commentary I listened to regarding where absolute inflation has to go to. But again, you better be in businesses that can price for the cost inflation and get above the inflation, right? I'm going to pause there and kind of open it up for questions.
Jim, thank you. Very, very interesting. Any questions or comments for Jim? We've absorbed a lot of information today, some of it more troubling than others, but it's been a lot to digest. So and what you had to say was fascinating. So I'm not suggesting you might have. Oh, I see John's hand up.
Jim, are you in a position where you can give us any actual names of companies that meet the kind of criteria you just got through?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, businesses that I love in this environment, Veeva Systems, so healthcare IT, 95% reoccurring revenues with pricing power, virtual monopoly on what they do. It's basically utility for pharmaceutical companies. So Veeva, it's come down a lot. It's finally got a valuation that I think is incredibly interesting. So that would be on the tech or healthcare side. Lonza, a Swiss-based biomanufacturer. So they're the largest manufacturer of drugs and biotech in the world. There's a global shortage of manufacturing capacity for biotech. They partner with everything from small cap to large cap biotech. And because of the FDA approval process, they have to be the manufacturer throughout the entire life cycle of that drug. And just to give you one example, because maybe some of you heard the news this morning that Biogen's Alzheimer drug has a very, very favorable results from slowing the progression of Alzheimer's. That drug alone, if approved, could suck up over 10% of all the manufacturing capacity in the world. I mean, that's how big of an indication that would be. I don't need that for a company like Lonza to be successful. I bring it up only because it's reasonably priced. They're a global leader. They're going to begin to generate an enormous amount of cash, and it's completely independent of all the stuff we're worried about from an economic backdrop. In alternative.
Yeah, I was just going to say on the Alzheimer's drug, it was a significant improvement, but not overwhelming. So slowing dementia progression by about 27%. But that's in the context of really nothing really working well at all. So yeah. It does give hope that if we can really achieve that going forward, that 27%, then further research to come up with even better results looks really promising. And with what we're facing with dementia in this country, in the world, it's huge.
I think it's incredibly fascinating. And the size of the potential category is enormous relative to our current pharmaceutical and biotech industry. So very encouraging in that respect. My last comment
was about... I had one other thought. Have some experience in the family with a drug called Namenda. And it's a kind of an example of what what the good doctor has raised. You know, I saw it as a drug, did some research on the family, and found out that the best you could expect was a possible slowing of deterioration in about 50% of the patients. But about 50% of the patients made no difference at all. Now, I suppose as horrible as that disease is, that's something that we would all accept some progress in. But I get concerned about initial enthusiasm and exuberance about relatively modest gains. So I hope this is a wonder thing, but I guess we'll see.
We'll see. My last comment on specific stocks that fit the profile we're looking for is in that alternative energy space. And our largest position in the portfolio is NextEra Energy. So two sides to their business, Florida Power and Light, regulated utility, but more interestingly, it's their unregulated business, which is the largest developer of wind and solar in this country by a large margin. So that fits the profile of growth and stability and predictability with a great capital structure. Now, as I say that, of course, Florida is being overwhelmed by one of the largest hurricanes I've seen in 20 years. So their infrastructure is going to be impacted by that. But again, it's a regulated utility. So, and then we have like the Teslas of the world. We have ON Semiconductor, which is just exploding with their silicon carbide technology and electrification semiconductor chips. There's a number of different names. Vestas, which is the world's largest wind turbine company. I think all of these companies, I love their trend. You need to be just a little more careful about where the valuations are today relative to the run-up they've had from the, I guess, loosely called Inflation Reduction Act legislation.
Any other questions or comments for Jim? I'm not seeing any, so go ahead.
Jim, one other question. Do you have, there's some cross currents there, it seems to me, with companies like, wind and battery. And that's the Chinese connection again. Are you concerned about the dominance that one entity has over the production of batteries and also the production of literally blades for wind generation? It always concerns me to see that kind of concentration in another government.
Oh, for sure. And I don't think it went unrecognized by our government with the legislation they just passed, because they've put in so many stepped up subsidies and forced local production built into that legislation. So the biggest beneficiary of this is probably Tesla, just because they have two plants now in the US, and they have already begun to localize everything down to lithium extraction to battery assembly, and they're gonna have to amplify that. But I don't want you to confuse the fact that Tesla's my best idea in that category. It's not, but I'm telling you, there is going to be a great, and there has been already a great reshoring and localization of manufacturing to shrink the supply chains and bring it under our control for just that concern that too much of our manufacturing over the last 20 years has been outsourced to China. The biggest beneficiary, that's probably Vietnam, but certainly Mexico and the US as well. That's why we have a number of other investments, such as Hexagon and Keyence, which are two of the world's premier players in automation and robotics, which, again, are in a world of incredibly scarce labor. You're trying to reshore and localize your manufacturing into an incredibly difficult labor market, and you will need to bring world-class automation and robotics to do that. So.
Jim, I wanted to ask also, with the EV production and so forth and batteries, the advancements in technology on recycling and being able to break those batteries down and reutilize the elements. And then also I was looking at reading about a company that's doing better in plastics recycling, Loop Industries and so forth, where they've been able to recycle just about any kind of plastic. So do you see recycling as somewhere that's going to gain further traction?
It has to. It absolutely has to. But I'm telling you, we're not very far along in that today. Certainly not here in the U.S. We're further along in Europe. But, you know, a company like, which I don't currently own in the portfolio for a variety of reasons, but Umicore, a Belgian-based company that specializes in the recycling of all types of minerals. The recycling process is hard, it's capital intensive, and it's dirty. So the U.S. has historically shied away from that because of some of our regulatory backdrop. But the alternative is throwing away lithium ion batteries, as an example, which over the course of the next 5 to 10 years, we're going to be building a mountain of old EV batteries in addition to the PC batteries that we're all probably throwing away right now, except, you know, that'll be an interesting industry. Who will do it? I know Tesla has one of their founders that spun out a bit or started his own business in Reno, where he's beginning to recycle the car batteries. But I think that's a story for 3 or 4 years from now. But it's an absolute necessity.
Interesting. All right. Well, let's continue. Fascinating. I don't see any other hands up. So, Jim, take it away.
I really don't have any other prepared comments unless you'd have any other specific concerns, stocks, positioning that are of interest to you.
I'm not seeing hands, but I think I speak for everybody. This has been a really interesting presentation. I actually appreciate that you didn't share your screen and we walked through a PowerPoint deck, because I think everybody was focused on what you had to say. And, you know, I certainly, I speak for everybody. We learned a lot from that insight into how you're building that portfolio. So your comments were really thoughtful and much appreciated.
Good.
All right. Well,
I just want to check on future client conferences and so forth with Artisan. Is that keep us notified?
Absolutely.
All right. Any other thoughts or comments for Jim or Tim? I'm not seeing any. So, Jim, thank you on behalf of the board. Thank you. Really thoughtful, interesting presentation. Enjoyed it. Learned a lot this morning.
Well, I want to thank all of you, because it has been a wonderful relationship with Contra Costa County over the last decade. So I'm embarrassed by the last 6 months, but I hope the bolus of the last 10 years has been rewarding for you, as certainly as it has been for us.
Well, Tim has been counseling us for years. It's not a "what have you done for me lately" world. It's the long view. It's how we it's how we have to have perspective. So I think we all share that view.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Jim.
Thanks, Jim.
All right. Tim, any final or wrap up thoughts on that? Or I'm not suggesting it, just didn't know if you had any.
No, I think it's just interesting to look at a portfolio like that that is so concentrated and then it's not macro oriented. And I thought it was a nice contrast to, we have all these discussions. What's going on in the world? What's the market think about the world? What's that mean for the portfolio? And it's important to remember, we do have some idiosyncratic managers in the lineup. We have some passive managers that just own the market, but we have some idiosyncratic managers that are very differentiated as well. So I think it was just nice to highlight the collection that we have in the portfolio. So that's all I had to say.
Interesting. Thank you. And as you were saying that, I was thinking on our friend Warren Buffett, who says he pays no attention to what economists say, because if they were so great at predicting outcomes as they profess to be, they'd all be multi-billionaires, and none of them are. Yeah. So anyway, I always find that fascinating, because quip on that. So
great. Thank you.